Well, good afternoon, my friend. Glad to see you made it in today.
Well, I had nothing else to do, on Wednesday. I thought I'd just wander in and
Well,
talk about
sure.
plants and stuff,
Sounds like a plan to me.
Yeah. And this is a garden show, and it is sometimes, and I get a little,
In the weeds, so
off
to
the
speak.
weeds. Yeah, that's good. In the weeds once in a while. But I always got a bottle of Roundup, so don't worry. And you can ask questions. You can call this radio station at 673-4464. Ask your question, and we'll have a discussion. And anyway, I thank you for listening. And today I'm going to be speaking. I read an article. I think it was in the Oregonian. I know maybe
that's a
bad,
nasty word.
I
here.
Know that's probably a bad thing to say as I sit in the News Review headquarters here. But it was about drought and heat and all the trees in the world are dying and all that kind of stuff. So I read the thing through, and quite honestly, I didn't agree with a lot of it. But it's what they write. So
yeah.
I wanted to countermand that article if anybody else had read it, and give you some insight on the types of trees and shrubs that will withstand the heat, will withstand the drought, that don't really need a whole lot of water to survive and grow. And the drought is real. I know that. But the scorching 99 degree days and the 104 days and 106 days, consistently for a month or more, that does more damage to the leaves than the actual absence of water.
I mean, in
conjunction with it, it's like a double whammy. Mm. But if it had sufficient water, even if it was well watered, a tree or a shrub, that intense sunlight and that intense heat, day after day after day after day, has a detrimental effect on the leaves. The leaves are thinner than a piece of paper in most cases.
Oh, and, that's thinner than our skin.
Well, yeah. And there are some trees and shrubs that have thicker leaves. But for the most part, most leaves on trees and things like that, they're fairly thin. So it can only take so much of that heat if it's, and it's not... not used to it. This is not Mexico or Saudi Arabia or someplace
China.
Like or China or something like that that has a lot of direct sun. So I wanted to kind of talk about that. And, what kind of plants can we plant in our yards for hot, dry, a hot, dry climate, if you will.
Yep.
And I got my Farmer's Almanac today for 2022, and I don't know how they can think they can predict the water and the rain and the cold and the snow a year and a half in advance, but it's good, it's fun reading. There's some weird articles.
Gives you a little marker to talk about.
Yeah, right. I'll do a in-depth study. I just kind of glanced at it today, and they said we're going to have in 2022. No, I don't know why they're focusing on 2022, but anyway, they said there'll be less rain, below average, blah blah blah, and they go by month to month and give you the high and low temperatures and the amount of rainfall or no rainfall, that kind of thing. And it wasn't as bad as the headline, of course, indicated. But, even if we got 28 inches, that would be okay. I mean, we would survive. It would still be dry, but...
we'd make it.
We'd make it, yeah, because this last year where we got 21 inches or something like that, it was way down.
And
normally it's, our average is like 30, 31, something like that.
Seems a lot more than that. But.
Yeah, it does. Sometimes it really does seem like a lot more than that. But at any rate... what are the things in case any of these predictions happen to come true, and we do have less water and less rainfall on an average? What do we do in the subsequent years with our trees and things like that? Now, mature trees, let's say mature as in they've been in 10 or 15 years, been growing, and they're 30 feet tall and look pretty good, they're going to have a more developed root system, and any available moisture in the soil, of course, is going to be theirs because they're going to be the root hogs.
Bullies.
Yeah, the bullies. They got bigger roots and more of them. And so consequently, your rhodias and your azaleas will suffer a bit. And throughout this whole summer, with a lot of folks, and I do consultations and things, and people say, well, there's something wrong with my yard. Can you come see me? And I go over there and I look. And as I see the different plant materials that way, in that condition, I explain this theory of mine to them, and they get it. And but what I also look for this time of year is, are there any buds there that are formed on the stems that indicate, even though the leaves are scorched out and brown or maybe
done
curled,
with or whatever.
Yeah. If there's buds there, that tree is not dead. That shrub is not dead. It just went into premature hibernation, okay? And it's saving up whatever energy and juices it can
left
for next year. You know, it's what they do. So, and I try to reassure them that if I see green buds, viable buds, on a tree or a shrub, I'll say, "Hey, next year it'll come out." I don't know how many years it could do that. Maybe it could do it forever. I'm not sure, but eventually, we've got to get some good rains. That's for sure.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah. So anyway, what plant? Here's a quiz. What plant is colorful all summer long, likes full sun and heat, and has thousands of blooms? Oh, and it grows very well here in Oregon. But I don't see the phone.
I don't see the phone.
Yeah,
what's the number there?
Oh, 673-4464.
There you go.
But I'm going to tell them. So if
well, spoil alert.
I know, spoil alert. Well, the Latin name is, it's a long one. A
lot of blackberry?
Almost. Lagerstromia. Lagerstromia, Lagerstromia. Lagerstromia.
Could I have maybe seen one of these?
You probably have. The common name is crepe myrtle, and they're blooming all over town right now. They're gorgeous. And
myrtle's busy.
And it loves the heat, and it loves the sun, and it grows. It'll grow in the desert. It'll grow anywhere, I think.
Jeez.
Except maybe on the top of Mount Hood, but that's okay. But they're in full bloom now, and they're going to continue until the weather cools. And when I say cool, I mean a consistent, say, 55 or 60 degree day in the middle of the day, that you'll start to see the blooms begin to fade and then fall off and all that. But, the leaves are great. The tree is great. The tree is still alive. It doesn't mind being in the dry ground. It has the whatever mechanisms that it was created with that it can withstand the dry and the heat. Like I say, it loves the heat. It loves the sun. Mm. And I plant, not quite a few because I don't have quite a few in stock, but when the place calls for it and they want some summer color, that's the type of
that's your go-to.
You betcha that's what they like, crepe myrtles. And there's so many different colors of them. And when they're blooming, there's literally thousands of flowers on them.
Wow.
And you get a tree that's 15 feet tall or 12 feet tall, something that's been in the ground for a long time. I got one of those at the nursery out front. Those puppies are just, gorgeous. They just go.
How about a phone call?
Okay, we got a phone call.
Hey caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
When my parents built a house down below Fresno in 1962, we landscaped with two rows of crepe myrtles in the backyard. Do you know, have you ever smelled a crepe myrtle that had smell?
Yeah, they all have some fragrance.
It's pretty faint to me.
Well, yeah, it's faint, but they all have some, some fragrance.
They get covered with bees.
Oh, yeah, the bees love them. Oh, man, that's why I don't smell too many of them.
That's honey heaven, baby.
You'll get a bee up your nose if you try to smell them,
Up your nose?
The reason I was asking that was if there's one that was more fragrant, I would like to know it.
Not to my knowledge. I'd have to research that, John, and I don't have a book.
No. It's fine.
Yeah.
I was asking because I've got a spot for another one. I've got two crepe myrtles growing up out on Broad Street, and they're 30 feet tall and just absolutely loaded with blooms.
Yeah, they've been in a while then, huh?
They have been, yes,
sir. That's good. Yep.
Anyway, I appreciate everything you do, Mike.
Okay, well, thanks for the call, John. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Well, may the bee of paradise fly up your nose.
Yeah, not when you're smelling a crepe myrtle, I'll tell you.
You don't want to do that.
But like I said, this is a good plant for our current weather pattern. How's that? If you think everything's going to die next week and all that, the crepe myrtle is not going to die on you. It's okay. And there are some other things, and I'll mention them as we go along in the show here. And these guys come in tree form with a single stem, and the branches and the leaves and the blooms are up on the top of the stem. They're a grafted material. And they also come as a shrub. So you've got your choice. If you want a bushy little shrub, you can buy that. Or if you want one that's in tree form, you can do that. The one I have in front of the nursery, I think we planted it maybe 15, 18 years ago. I'm not sure.
Wow.
And it was a shrub type. And right now, like I said, it's a good 12, maybe 15 feet tall.
Mm.
And it is probably 8 feet wide with branches.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at it here not too long ago thinking, huh, I think I could prune that into a tree, you know, or just I'm gonna wait and see when winter rolls around and the leaves fall off, if there's a good branching pattern there, I might just go ahead and eliminate some of those branches and see if I can form a tree out of it. And that would even be more spectacular.
So you're still waiting?
I'm still waiting. I'm in the holding pattern.
Yeah.
But they grow with minimal care. They're easy to grow. And overwatering is death to them, trust me.
Oh.
Yeah, when you first plant them, of course, you got a brand new plant, and it's being moved from a pristine nursery situation to your yard, which is not quite the same geographical location as the nursery. You know, and you do all the right things and put the good soil in, blah, 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 blah. A little water, you know, once a week keeps them growing well that first season. Now, if you put it in the fall, like after, you know, we've had 2 or 3 inches of rain, the ground is sufficiently wet, and you plant it then, you're not going to have to water it again until the following June or July, maybe.
Nice.
But in the meantime, it's putting out roots, and it's growing well, and in the spring, it's really pushing growth and doing its thing. And, you know, you play the weather by ear, and if it jumps up into the 95-plus category, you might give it a little bit of water once a week at the most that first year. But after that, they're pretty much on their own. I mean, you don't really have to do anything to them.
Mm.
It's just an amazing plant. And then after 5 years or so, watering is not essential at all, but maybe once a month in the summer if you feel like dragging a hose over. But it doesn't hurt them when they're that mature. And they're relatively disease-free, and birds cannot stay away. Hummingbirds,
oh,
it's like hummingbird heaven.
I mean,
they're in there going after it, and they're just doing their thing. And you can have 20 hummingbirds attacking that crepe myrtle. And they're not considered a fast grower, so you got to be patient. And, you know, some only grow to a total height, depending on the variety, to maybe 3 to 5 feet. And then some varieties that I've read about, they can reach 25 feet. 25 feet tall, and if it's a shrub, it's a very wide one too.
Yeah,
so you better watch out. And they, like I said, they'll lose their leaves in the winter. They all fall off, but before they fall off, the leaves will color up, and they've got kind of a red and orange fall look to them. It's usually the orange is in the middle of the leaf, and then there's kind of a red tinge on some of them around the outside edge. Really attractive in that respect. So they're nice. And crepe myrtles bloom on new wood. In other words, as the new growth comes in the spring, the brand new branches, those are the ones that are going to bloom. So if when you're pruning, you prune a whole lot of the tree or the shrub off, it's not going to make any difference on the blooming capacity for mm-hmm. the following year, because as soon as they shoot new little limbs
right.
and branches, that's where the blooms.
Those are the ones that are
those are the blooming gotcha. Branches, and that's what they do.
And that sounds like a good place to pause.
Okay, we'll pause at the blooming branch.
We'll be right back. News Radio 1240 KQEN. And as we come out of this break, Kyle popped his head in and said, remind you that it's going to be 93 degrees on Friday, and that's almost 100.
Yeah, well, he can keep it.
I thought you were going to say, what do you, say what you really mean.
No, I'm not. Then I'd be banned from radio for life.
Oh, Lordy.
I hate 100.
I kind of enjoy it, maybe once in a while.
Well, if I had a swimming pool or something to jump into, that's different. But I don't.
If you're down in Vegas. Yeah, you're not in Vegas.
No, we're not in Vegas. So anyway, I've been talking about crepe myrtles and how cool they are and how much they bloom and how much they like the heat. Hey, so
there you go.
We're okay.
Friday's coming.
Yeah. So light pruning, like I said, is okay and doesn't hurt the blooming process. So if you don't prune, when the new growth happens, you'll have plenty of blooms. That's how it works. Pruning small inside branches also helps the shape of the plant, and usually the inside branches don't have any blooms to speak of. It's like everything on the outside where the sun can get to it. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, and then I was talking about how big they are. There's a Japanese crepe myrtle that can grow 20 to 30 feet tall and as wide with upright growth.
And it's still called a tree?
Yeah, it's a crepe myrtle tree, yeah. And then there's a Chinese crepe myrtle.
Oh, here we go, China.
Yeah, jeez Louise. Crepe myrtle that can grow to 25 feet tall. So it's, in different places in different parts of the world, growing conditions and, whatever they got going. Mm-hmm. It's And these guys on this one from China, the leaves are very dark green, very narrow with a red tinge to it in the spring. And so it's very attractive even when it's not blooming. Mm. And they also have good fall color and the leaves turn orange and red. So, yeah, it's
you have some of those?
No, I wrote to China, and they said, we are all out of Chinese crepe myrtles.
Yeah, something happened on the assembly line.
Son of a gun. Oh, well. Then there's one more here. Then there's the giant crepe myrtle, which is native to India and Australia. And this crepe can grow to 80 feet tall. Mm. I mean, I can't. There was no photo. I couldn't see it, but I was just, doing the research. 80 feet tall. And the leaves are 8 to 12 inches long and 4 inches wide. And the only problem is they can't grow in our climate because of, natural India, Australia, that's different from Roseburg, okay? And normally these trees are used as a street tree in Hawaii. And, we put maple trees down our downtown streets and they work and everything. Well, in Hawaii, they use crepe myrtles. So they're, in bloom, and it's, the coldest day in Hawaii. When I lived there a year and a half, and I think the coldest day we ever had was 66 degrees or 68 degrees.
You poor baby.
And everybody put the heaters on, and they're wearing coats. Well, when it's always 80 degrees, you get used to it, man.
That's a nice day in the winter here.
Yeah, it is. It would be a beautiful day. But as I was doing my research, I counted 29 varieties of crepe myrtle in my Western Garden book. And I'm sure there are more varieties being developed that won't hit the market for, a few years yet. But, the mad scientists in those greenhouses go, let's cross this one with this one and come up with a black flower or something, or a brown flower, or a pure white flower. That's what they do.
It's endless.
Endless. Always endless. They're just tree freaks. Oh, gosh. Another tree that can grow and take the heat and is attractive and very different is an olive tree. There is I got my first olive tree, 15 years ago, just to see. And it's a black Spanish olive, and it's edible and all that. Hmm. Well, it was a few years after that I read an article here in the News Review, this guy who moved up from, I think, California. And he lives out in the Glide area, just a little past Glide. He's got a ranch out there. He planted a whole grove of olive trees.
Wow.
He put 7,000 olive trees on his land. Now, I tried to find this place one day. I said, I got to see this, this is cool. So I went out on the road that they said he was on, and I got to the end of the road, and, of course, there was a big gate there. with locks and stuff, but I could see, I had a glimpse of the grove, and you know, beautiful. And the and the black Spanish olive is a pretty tree. It grows nicely. You know, I've used some in landscape jobs. You know, make sure that people, I tell them, oh, this it's going to have olives on it, and
it's going to take forever to grow.
It's a slow grower, but it is really unique, and they are beautiful. They got kind of a long leaf, and the leaves are kind of green with a gray tint to them, and it's an evergreen, so it never loses all its leaves, but it does produce olives. I've got one in my place I planted this last spring. Yeah, this last spring. I take the culls home. You know, the ones that aren't quite up to snuff that nobody would buy anyway.
They're cheaper that way.
Well, yeah, that's why I take them home, because nobody's going to buy it for another 2 years. But it already has olives on it, and it's like 3.5 feet tall. That's it, and it's loaded with olives.
Nice. Yeah. Somebody missed out on that one.
Oh, yeah, I know. I would have sold it for, you know, twice the price or something like that.
Make sure you put a price tag on it.
But and they grow well. One of my daughters lives in Texas, in Austin, Texas, and that's kind of the starting of the hill country in Texas. And every time we've ever visited, of course, we go for rides and look at all the different ranches and things and small towns and all that. They grow a lot of the black Spanish olive in Texas. I mean, acres and acres and acres of them. So they really like the heat. They like the sun, man. Mm-hmm. And they'll put up with the rain if it comes. But not much. But it's got a kind of a medium rate of growth. It doesn't shoot right up there. Even if you fertilize it, it doesn't. It puts a little more growth on, but it's not like like a maple tree. You throw too much fertilizer on and the sucker grows 4 feet, you know, or even one of our fruit trees. But and it also flowers, but the flowers are very small white flowers, really tiny. It's not showy at all. But the tree, and like I said, the tree itself is a showy tree. But the flowers, there's some little...
Take it or leave it.
Yeah, teeny white flowers, big deal. But it's not a messy tree either, so there's not a lot of stuff that you have to clean up until it gets maybe 20 feet tall and it's got 10,000 olives on it to drop on your lawn, you know, maybe that. But it's good. It's a good tree. It's a good tree for a yard. And the shape, the texture, and the color of the olive trees makes it, you know, very unique as a landscape specimen to have in your yard, whether it's in the front yard, at your entryway, or, you know, and like I said, it's evergreen, so it's never going to lose its leaves. It's going to look good year-round.
Cool.
And, you know, people might consider that. We were growing. Each year we try to grow some more. They're somewhat harder to root out, but we've had my daughter Jill does that, and she's had some pretty good success. Not 100%, but you know, maybe 60%, something like that.
Bad.
So no, it isn't. No, you know, and when we do our cuttings, there's a plant flat, and usually we put 100 cuttings per flat. You know, just you dip them in the rooting hormone, and then you put them right in, and it's clean mason sand that we root them in and put them on the heat beds. And within 3 weeks, you got roots. If you don't have roots within 3 weeks, probably not going to make it. I haven't figured out why. Or, you know, why some of them do and some of them don't, because you treat each one the same. You use sharp, like razor knife, so you got a good clean cut.
Yeah.
You know, if you shred the bark or something like that, it weakens it, and you know, fungus can get in it, and
takes a long time to repair.
Yeah, right. long time, but anyway, and if you do get an olive tree, you don't want to plant it. You know, close to some structure of any sort, because at first it's small and showy, but in time it will begin to expand. So don't hug it up against the house or up against the fence or something like that. And you know, you'll enjoy that they're tough, they're beautiful, and they're unique. Not too many people in Roseburg, other than the guy that's got 7,000 of them up there in Glide, will you know, you won't see many of them.
Maybe you can get him as a guest one of these days.
I was thinking of that. I don't know his name. I'd have to go up to the gate and bang on his gate till they let me in.
And then he comes with a shotgun.
But that's a good idea. You know, that
yeah,
really,
yeah.
And he could talk about it. Because I think last year there was an article, again, in the News Review about he had his first olive oil crop, and he made 700 pints of olive oil.
That's expensive stuff.
Oh yeah, 700 pints, but he had 7,000 trees, and they're young yet, so mm-hmm. he didn't have the quantity of olives to do, but the 700 pints, I don't know the process on how to make the olive oil. I'm sure it's
it must be something,
a secret or something
long
out there.
Long in process.
Yeah, but you know, I don't know how much a pint of olive oil sells for, but I'm sure it's not cheap.
No, I don't know what it is either, but I know when I was working at a pizza place in Sutherland,
uh-huh.
he was always commenting on the price of the olive
oil.
Yes.
Yeah, really, huh? Yeah, well, this is homegrown stuff. This is the real thing,
the
man.
Fresh.
This is the organic stuff from Douglas County. But what's cool about what's neat about the olive trees, they can take the heat. They don't mind the heat. That's another good tree. And they have like a kind of a narrow pyramidal shape, and it's basically a trouble-free tree.
Have you ever tasted that, olive oil?
Not from that particular tree, but, you know, my wife uses it in cooking.
I just had to try it at that pizza place to see.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Just straight?
Straight.
Oh, yeah? What did it taste like?
Well, I didn't particularly care for it, but it wasn't bad either. Yeah. You know, it was kind of bitter.
Could you get the olive taste at all?
No? Not at all.
Huh.
It was just kind of bittersweet, you know?
Huh.
I don't know.
Well, it's supposed to be healthy for you.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll have to partake.
Yeah, you get a six-pack of it and take it home.
All right. In search of olive oil we go.
Yes.
News Radio 1240 KQEN. Be right back with more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show. Well, afternoon, we are back again. It's 4:39. What do you know about that, Mike?
Well, that's good. I'm glad the clock's still working. And if you want to call, 673-4464 if you have a question. And I've been speaking about drought, heat-loving types of trees, and I'll have a few shrubs on that list, too. But as the media, and I'm sitting in the middle of media land.
Yes, sir.
As the media continues to trumpet the drought and the disaster of drought, there are trees and shrubs that will survive without a whole lot of water, and they love the heat. So your landscape will not totally disappear if you plant the right things at the right time. And that's all I'm trying to do here is to share the types of
what works and what don't.
Yeah, what's going to work for you here in case it does get hotter and drier. But I talked about the olives, and that's mm-hmm. they're just great. But one of the best drought resistant trees growing in our area, all over our hills right here in Oregon, is the madrone. They can grow out of rocks,
mm-hmm.
they can grow out of gravel, they can grow off of cliffs.
They make excellent firewood.
Absolutely excellent firewood. And, you know, I was at a place, this is a few years back, a brand new home that was being built, and the general contractor was there, and we were talking about the landscaping and stuff, and mm-hmm. and he happened to mention, I don't know what I said, but he said, "You ever seen a madrone floor?" I says, "A madrone floor?" He says, "Yeah, come on in."
Hmm.
And the kitchen in this brand new home was made out of madrone.
Interesting.
It was gorgeous.
Wow.
It was beautiful. You know, and has all the little tight knots in the wood and everything.
Yeah.
And the kind of the red,
mm-hmm.
red, orange, and light coloring in the boards and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was all tongue and groove stuff. And he had put it in. I don't know where he got it. I says, "Was it expensive?" He says, "Very expensive."
I would think so, yes.
You know, there's not too many sawmills around that, you know, do
Madrone.
But it was beautiful.
I bet it lasts forever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you couldn't hurt it.
You couldn't, no.
There's no way you could hurt it. But madrones that are growing in our hills, they are drought resistant. They love the sun. They love the heat. They grow out of rocks. They grow out on south slopes. Nothing seems to hurt them. And it's an evergreen, so that's, you know, a plus, too. But it does shed the old leaves this time of year. And if you took a ride out in the country somewhere, you know, Melrose or the other way, and you would see some of the madrones that they got a lot of yellow leaves and brown leaves on them, but they got green leaves at the same time. Right. And they're dropping all those right now. And they're dropping more than what they normally drop sooner than they normally
That's
drop.
That's not good.
Well, it's okay. That's they, that way they don't have to supply energy for the bad leaves. I mean, all the energy that they have left that that they can get from the ground, it goes into the new growth. So that's a plus. They know what's going on. They say, well, let's get rid of this old junk and we don't die.
Start anew.
Yeah, we'll start anew here. But it is just beautiful. It does well. Some people call them weed trees and things like that.
You got to
get rid of them. But I've got them on my place, and I've got some very old big ones, and they are really, really gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And they, like I said, they got a reddish bark and very gnarly, twisted limbs, and
limbs
are big. And none of them are straight up and down. They're all kind of leaning this way or that or going sideways. You know,
kind of like the way I walk.
Yeah, you know, I've watched you. Yes, you walk just like a madrone. Oh gosh, but the tree itself with those kinds of limbs and the shape of them, they're really a great statement, if you will. And its growth range is from British Columbia to Southern California.
Oh,
now I've been in British Columbia a few times, maybe three or four times, and I don't recall seeing any madrone up there. But I was on a highway and speeding along to Banff or somewhere, and there are some up through the Okanagan Valley. It's pretty dry, and they got a lot of orchards and things like that. But and the hills are pretty far away, but I wasn't looking for madrone back in them days. I was just enjoying a real vacation.
What is that?
Yeah, I know. No, I don't know. But the leaves on a madrone, they can be up to 6 inches long, and they're a very dark, shiny green on the upper side, and kind of a lighter, dull green on the underside. And in the spring, it has clusters of white to pinkish bell-shaped flowers. They're not very large, but there's hundreds of them.
I don't think I've ever seen those.
Oh yeah, they're really pretty. And then in the fall, they turn into clusters of flowers turn into the red orange berries that you see on the drones in the fall.
Oh.
And the birds, boy, the birds just go after them. But anyway, they stay on most of the winter, and there's like bird food all winter for those birds that like them.
So they serve a purpose.
Yeah, they do. And then whatever falls to the ground, new madrones sprout out. Now, if you happen to plant one in your yard, it has to have fast draining soil. It does not like water. Mm-hmm. It likes it dry. It won't do it. So if you have a regular flat yard, say in Roseburg or Winston or Sutherland or something like that, you want to mound it up real well, or you plant it on a slope so that there's no sitting water in the roots and it'll be fine. I've had one landscape job years ago. The lady requested a madrone. She says, I love them. I out of state somewhere.
Huh.
And she moved in up by the golf course and in Sutherland.
Okay. Yeah.
And she says, I want a madrone. I love them. They're beautiful. I said, okay, I'll try to find you one. And I went through my nursery catalog, and there's hundreds of nurseries in there, and they'll give a brief description of the plants they grow, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I found one that said madrone. I went, whoa, shoot. So I called them up and said, hey, this is what I'd like to have. How many you got? How big are they? And that kind of thing. What's the price? Blah, blah, blah. And he said, I got some nice four-footers and this, and I got some larger ones and some smaller ones. I says, well, put my name on a four-footer, okay? And I'll drive up there. And it was somewhere south of Salem out in that area. And I drove in there, and he had a lot of native stuff. And I wish I remembered the name of the nursery now, but I can look it up. But I bought her one. And I planted it in her landscape, and we really mounded it up. Even though it was on a slope, it was a gentle slope, but we still mounded it. And I told her, don't give it a lot of water. So that was probably 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You ought to see that thing. It is gorgeous.
Is it?
It's absolutely nice. Beautiful. It looks like Super Madrone. I mean, she's taken excellent care of it. And it probably went from, you know, like I said, it was about 4 feet when I got it, and it's probably, oh, good 10, 12 feet now.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know they could grow that fast.
Well, I didn't either. I mean, and out there on those dry hillsides, they don't. But in her yard, whatever she did, she had the magic touch, man. Mm. She did a really great job. And one of these days when I'm up in that area, I'm going to do a drive-by and see.
Find out.
Yeah. But like I said, if you plant one in your yard, fast draining soil, got to be a must. And mound it up, and don't put a sprinkler near it or anything like that.
Don't drown it.
It loves the heat, you know. And I got several on my hills, and I got some pretty steep country where I live. I got eight flat acres out of 120. Okay, so you can think about that. but it's full of, and I've got Madrones on the scattered throughout, but I've got some that are out there on those harsh south-facing slopes where there's very little soil and lots of sun, and there are several of them are over 100 years old, I'm sure.
Good heavens.
Yeah, and the one I have, I only went to it once or twice because it's so far up the hill and it's so stinking steep that I don't want to have to climb back.
Do it again.
I used to climb up there when I was 25 and 30, but now, you know, at my age, nah, I don't need that. I know what it looks like.
I was just trying to think who was president 100 years ago, wasn't it?
McKinley.
McKinley? Okay. I'll buy it.
I don't know. Or Eisenhower, who knows? But and this one has got to be several hundred years old. Yeah. But the diameter of the tree is 7 feet.
Wow.
7 foot around.
That's a big one.
Oh, yeah. And the side branches, and I climbed up in the side branches because they're only about 4 feet off the ground, this one big side branch. The branch itself was probably 24 to 30 inches in diameter.
Good heavens.
Yeah. Yeah, and I sat there, and then the hillside drops, you know, straight down. And so you're not just 4 or 5 feet up in the air. If you ever fell off that, you wouldn't quit rolling until you hit the bottom, you know.
Mm.
But they're a really hardy tree. They're a beautiful tree.
They are.
And they are available to buy in just a few nurseries, but you have to search for the nursery. You have to get online and look in the OAN catalog, Oregon Association of Nurseries catalog, and it'll list all the nurseries, and then, like I say, they'll have a quickie menu of these are the things we grow, blah, 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 blah. Give them a call, and they may have one. So, do we have a break or something?
We do.
Well, you kept looking at the clock.
Yeah, I was looking at the clock and saying, hey, maybe now. Now. All right. We'll take our last break and be back with more.
I will come back, trust me.
Absolutely. News Radio 1240 KQEN. All right. We are in the final few minutes of the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on this Wednesday.
Well, and I'm not going to get through all my notes because I still have 2 pages of notes that I'm...
we've been having too much fun.
I know. But another tree that needs little water, of course, are the juniper family.
Juniper.
And junipers are... used wrongly for the most part, because most people put little juniper spreaders too close together and this kind of thing. But I'm going to speak about the tree junipers. And, you know, if you're ever going to Eastern Oregon or anything like that and you kind of drive around, you can see juniper trees that are 30 feet tall and with trunks and that kind of stuff. That's,
wow. Yeah,
and they grow in an arid, sandy, rocky.
Kind of like the Madrone.
Kind of like the Madrone. And they will grow here. Again, it's one of those, you don't want to overwater, and you want to make sure it's got good drainage. But they come, like I said, in shrub size and or trees. And both work well in the sun and the dry locations. And the shrub sizes are readily available every spring at every box store and nursery and all that kind of stuff. They're easy to come by, and we sell a lot of them, and we use a lot of them and all that. I'm not wanting to disparage the shrub juniper, but oftentimes they're overused, and you need to be a little bit more knowledgeable if you and space them out better. So
kinda
that they
got to know what you're doing.
Yeah, that's true. Now, the tree-sized junipers are just as tough and very picturesque as well. And the most common tree size is the western juniper, the most common. It's the biggest, I guess, in the western. And it's called western juniper, that's it. And they range from like central Washington through Oregon down to Southern California in the dry regions. Nice. So you're looking at eastern Washington, eastern Oregon, eastern California, that kind of stuff. And they get big, and they grow, some of them grow 50, 60 feet tall.
Mama mia.
Yeah, yeah. And my in-laws live in Reno, and sometimes we, when we go visit them, we'll go down through Klamath Falls, down through Alturas, and that's all that. High desert. It's all about 4,000, 4,500 foot, and you'll see these trees down there. And you know, they sometimes they're as thick as a forest, and sometimes there's just one out here and one out there.
Real sparse,
but they're big. Some of them really big. And the book said 30 to 40 feet or blah blah blah, that kind of thing. Well, I've seen them bigger, so.
So there you go, book.
But you know, like I say, if you plant them here, full sun is best. No water needed except rain. You know, and again, well-drained, mounded soil, and they'll do well. And the color can be really deep green to gray, or even like a blue-green. And these trees like are almost no maintenance, zero maintenance.
Nice.
I've had one growing. I planted one years ago in my nursery, just on the corner of a row, just to see how it would do. And that puppy's probably 12 inches in diameter now, and probably 20 feet, something like that.
Nice size.
But it has good drainage, even though there are sprinklers all around it watering everything else. I made sure there was good drainage for this so it wouldn't
drown it.
It wouldn't drown, you know. But they're really pretty. And like I said, there's almost no maintenance. You know, a few needles will fall down and that kind of thing.
Nothing to speak of.
But they're hard to come by locally. But you know, if you really, really want one, you know, you could probably take a little trip to Bend or Madras or Klamath Falls, and they, you know, those stores would probably carry them, nurseries and things like that, because it's pretty common over there. But maybe I'm wrong on that too. But there's one called the alligator juniper, and I thought, what? And I was thinking, what's the reason for calling it an alligator juniper?
Is
it bite people or what? You know, as you're going by, there was no explanation.
I thought, just the name,
and they'll get to 40 feet tall, and it grows wild in the southwestern U.S. like Arizona, New Mexico, and into Old Mexico. And they're this native natural tree that grows in the middle of that hot, dry country. And some of it is high elevation, so they get some snow in the winter, but doesn't seem to hurt the tree. And and I haven't, like I said, I don't have any idea where I got its name.
I was thinking maybe the bark is like alligator.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Well, I didn't even see a picture of it, for crying out loud. But there are 9 varieties of the tree junipers that are listed in the Western Garden Book. And the flip side of that, on the shrub junipers, there are 58 varieties that are listed. And, you know, they tell them the color, the size, you know, the height, the width, how to take care of them, that kind of thing. And it was just, so I just counted up just to see how many there were. And that's like, oh. And there's a lot of East Coast varieties that aren't in the book. So this is just the Western.
They're all over the place.
Yeah. So they go from the ground-hugging types to the larger shrubs with many different colors and growth patterns. I like the golden junipers that are kind of green in the middle, and the growing tips are very gold, very showy, and they seem not to succumb to any kind of disease or anything like that. I usually plant them on slopes. You know, so many houses, new homes, et cetera, they got a slope of, say, a 8-foot slope or a 10-foot slope. Not real steep, but it's still a slope. You don't put a lawn on it or anything, so ground cover. And that's where I like to put the juniper, because they're out of the way, they look good, and they got good drainage, and you can't mess with them. Even if you have a sprinkler, it's not going to drown them.
No, so it's
going to drain right off, so that's good. And they all, like I say, have different growth patterns. Some of them are a little bit faster. Some of them don't seem to grow hardly at all. I mean, but you can tell year to year there's a little bit of a change, but they're, you know, it might only grow 2 or 3 inches in a year.
Very minor.
Yeah, yeah. And then some might grow 7 or 8 inches, and you can tell. Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can notice that one.
Yeah. And then, what, is that it?
Then we're done.
Oh, man. I was on a roll. I got more to say.
I was going to give you an update on the exit 209 shrubbery there.
Oh,
the
yeah?
The exit. Drove up there the other day, and they are doing excellent.
Good.
That old shrubbery they cut out.
Yeah.
Well, it's growing. There you go.
You mean pruning really works?
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
We'll see you next time.